Hello, my joys, and welcome back to the Power of Joy, where today I will be joined by the one and only Davina DeCampo. Davina DeCampo is the stage name of Owen Farrow, a seasoned British drag queen and singer known for her high soprano and full octave range. Davina has been featured on national television programs including The Voice, All Together Now, and of course, the first season of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. Iconique. Her love of theatre led her to star in stage productions including The Ruby Slippers, a play that explores prejudice in the LGBT community, and Dancing Bear, a musical that explores faith, sexuality and gender identity. Davina has worked with George House Trust, a charity supporting people living with HIV. She has also hosted Superbia's Drag Queen Storytime, reading stories to young children. When not touring, recording or filming, Owen enjoys a quiet life with his husband. I am so excited for you all to listen to this episode. We had an absolute ball, and Davina's laugh is so infectious. So expect a lot of laughter, a lot of joy as Davina shares her story right here on The Power of Joy. Get yourself comfy, everyone. This is going to be fun. This is Joy with Davina DeCampo.
This meeting is being recorded.
Oh my God, what are you so loud for?
I know, why is that? That was just like, this is being recorded, just shouting down your ears. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all right. And also out of my computer for some reason. It's weird, isn't it? Gorgeous. I'm just untangling myself from all the cables. There we go. I'm untangled and I'm ready.
You're ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I said it with determination, didn't I?
Whenever you're ready. Davina DeCampo, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to The Power of Joy.
Oh, The Power of Joy.
It's a joy to have you here. How are you today?
Gorgeous. Really, really good. Yeah. I've been for coffee with a friend of mine. So that was nice. We had some cake. We told each other a lot of gossip.
Lovely. Lovely. And it's Valentine's Day as well. Happy Valentine's Day.
It's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, darling Adam. Happy Valentine's Day.
Have you got any plans for Valentine's?
I mean, my husband and I, it's our wedding anniversary anyway, on the 11th. So we've already, I mean, we didn't really celebrate, you know, it's Whitney's death day as well. So that's how most people remember our wedding anniversary. You know, it pops up on their Facebook stories that Whitney died that day and they go, oh, better message Davina and Paul.
Oh my gosh. What are the chances of that? I'll never forget that now.
I know. Literally the same day. The yeah. same day. Everybody was devastated. We were in the middle of the party afterwards, and people just kept coming up to us and going, Whitney's died.
Oh gosh.
Not congratulations.
Yeah. You're like, happy anniversary, but also Whitney's died. Okay. Well, that's not a joy, but a bit of a joy at the same time.
I mean, listen, we take it where we can find it, don't we?
Yeah. Now, speaking of joy, let's just dig straight in and ask you, Davina, what are the things that bring you joy every single day?
Oh, wow. I mean, waking up for a start, you know, I am genuinely really, really grateful to be alive at this moment in history with my life, you know, where I am. Mm-hmm. I am so incredibly fortunate. And so I'm grateful every morning just for waking up. Yeah. You know, before we get a bit metaphysical and deep about it, you know, the parameters for life are absolutely minuscule. Mm-hmm. If it was just a little bit hotter or a little bit colder, or we were a little bit further away from the sun or closer, nothing, there is no life, you know. So we're in this incredible sweet spot in terms of the universe. And then in terms of human evolution, and where we live in the world, you know, we're incredibly lucky. Mm-hmm. So yeah, super, super grateful for all of those things. And that my body still does what it does. You know, yes. I'm incredibly lucky, and that my voice is still there despite, you know, I used to have basically a chest infection 2 or 3 times a year, which would just, you know, ravage my voice. But touch wood, she's healthy. She's been healthy for nearly 2 whole years. And, you know, and I keep getting opportunities thrown my way. There's so much for me to be grateful for. And my husband, I have the most incredible husband. Aww. Who's just the sweetest, kindest and most supportive person. I'm super, super lucky. And then look at all of this foolishness behind me.
I love it. What a backdrop. It's gorgeous.
All these silly costumes.
What a joy. So colourful. And joyous.
You've got a lovely unit behind you, all full of lovely things.
I've got a disco ball. I've got my love wings. Yeah. I've got some plants, which my partner Craig takes care of, which you know, Craig, because he directed the Ruby Slippers.
I do. And we'd had various directors by the point Craig came on board. And when I tell you that Craig made a big difference to the production, the first director we had. So to put this in context for the audience, the Ruby Slippers, it's not even on my CV and it should be. I don't know why it's not there. But the Ruby Slippers was based in a gay bar and it's basically the coming out story of a trans person. So it's based in a gay bar and it's the coming out story of a trans person, you know, this trans girl, Rachel. And the first director we had, who just kept on going on about, it's theatre, mm-hmm. It's not TV. You've got to act like it's got to be bigger because it's theatre. Yeah. But she's one of those directors who doesn't really direct you and just blocks instead. You know, stand there. Just stand there and say the lines. And then when you say that line, just move across. All right. And scene. And she didn't believe in gay people.
Wrong show. Complete wrong show.
What?
Yeah.
How are you directing this show? Yeah. I didn't find that out until we were on to like the third or fourth performance of the show. Right. And one of the other part of the creative team was like, yeah, she doesn't believe in gay people. Like, she's so religious that she doesn't believe. You know, like, there's jobs that I've been offered and I've gone, like, okay, I was asked to audition for Taboo recently.
Right.
And they asked me to audition for, I always forget. This is terrible. Really big. He's enormous. He's like 6'3" mm-hmm. and he's 18 stone. And he's Lee Bowery.
Right.
I don't know why I have this mental block with Lee Bowery's name. Like I love his work and, I've watched all the films and everything. They asked me, I would be the most disappointing Lee Bowery possible because I'm like 5'8" and a smidge and I'm 10 stone. You're expecting somebody who's 6'3" and then wearing 10-inch platforms who is 18 stone. Like, this is a literal mountain of a human being.
Yeah.
And I'm going to trot on and be like, hello, little me. So I was like, yeah, I know what the reviews would be. Good performance, wrong casting. Because people really know what he looks like. It's not the right thing for me. So when you get offered a job like that and it's not the right thing for you, just say, actually, somebody else will do a much better job of this than me.
Yeah.
You know, we all have to do that. So I was like, why, as a director, why have you not gone, yeah, this, I'm not the one for this. Whereas Craig was fantastic and took everything to a completely new level.
Oh, yeah. Well, I absolutely loved it. I came to see you in a rehearsal space in Crosby. And I actually came to see your rehearsal, I know, years ago. And then I came to the show. It was in the Arts Theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And my little video camera, I was like the mum from Mean Girls, literally at the back filming it all on the little camera. And I loved it.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Adam, that I don't remember.
I know, it's so long ago. I know, I feel like I never even had a chance to have an encounter with you. I was just like watching from afar, just like in awe. And that's when I first came across you. And then I remember Craig going, you never believe it. I was like, Davina is going on the first series of the UK RuPaul Drag Race. I was like, oh my gosh. And I just remember being in awe of your talent then in the Ruby Slippers. And I was like, okay, she's going to slay. She's going
to
literally.
That's very kind of you to say that. I don't think it's quite true, but.
It is! And all these years later, here we are on the Power of Joy. Absolutely.
Here we are having a little chat together.
I know. So let's go way back when, though. What was life like for you growing up? When did you discover Davina DeCampo? When was she born?
Yeah, this is like early life is kind of in two parts. you know, there's two halves. There's the small, I would say that life was great up until high school, and then everything just went, you know, and exploded. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really thought about that until just saying it right now. But that is kind of what happened. You know, you go to a high school, mum and dad just broke up that year. It had not been a good relationship for a very long time. And they finally broke up that year. And then you go to high school and you've moved away from an environment that's very supportive and into a very different arena. You know, it was a big school. It was 1,500 kids and it was the 90s. It's rough. It's homophobic. It's, racist, homophobic, all the things.
All
like
of the things.
That, you know, the 90s were not great. So, yeah, kind of early childhood is in two very distinct halves. And then I trot off to uni. And while I'm at uni, I start reading, you know, like Butler and about gender studies and all of that kind of stuff as part of my course. So I'm doing drama and dance and I'm singing like weird stuff by John Cage and all of these other, you know, like full spectrum, this is weird, what the hell is going on kind of work. That's the sort of stuff that I was doing, you know, running around naked, covered in jam and flour and crowing like a pigeon or something, you know, that kind of stuff. Which is great. I really enjoyed it. And it gives you a different understanding of art and other things. And I started doing some kind of gender stuff around then. And then there'd been little bits of drag through that. Then I talk about this in one of my shows, that the reason that I really started doing drag was because I sang the Cat duet with my singing teacher, who was, you know, she was an opera singer, founder member of Opera North. She's incredible.
Yeah.
And she just turned up at school and was like, oh, I'm the new teacher here teaching flute and clarinet. And I'm also just happened to have been an international opera star. What?
Yeah.
Crazy. What?
Yeah.
So she, for this funny talent show, we sang the Cat duet, which is me, oh, me, oh, me, oh. And it goes on like that. And it's a joke, you know, the whole thing is a joke and it's lots of fun. But she introduced me as Madame Farracina, like that. And so then I created this character, Madame Farracina, who's very Italian. She sings all the Italian arias. So you're coming on a Friday night, she's singing, oh, mio dolce adoro, and you know what? People didn't really enjoy that all that much on a Friday night over a pastella. I don't know why.
I'm enjoying the vocals. Got the vocals.
they weren't that into it. I'm not going to say it's because it was in Stoke-on-Trent, but I'm also not saying it wasn't because it was in Stoke-on-Trent. No, it was like that. Don't do that to people in a bar on a Friday night. They don't want it. So she eventually got killed off. And she, you know, she'd done all right. She'd made a bit of a name, but time for a rebrand. You know, I was Opal Fruits before I was Starburst. And so then I changed my name. We held a little competition to name the drag queen and everybody came back with like Betty Swallocks or Karen See Next Tuesday Flaps or like names like that. And I was like, I don't think these aren't quite right for me. Maybe for some of the other queens who work here, but not for me. So I put various other names in there and then we held a vote and thankfully Davina won. So gorgeous.
Yes. Christ. Oh my gosh. And then of course, RuPaul.
Yeah.
RuPaul's Drag Race. You are the OG. Like, how did it feel when you got the call to be on the show?
I am not, like, I can be very kind of gregarious when I'm with friends. But when things like that happen, I'm quite internal, you know, I'm quite kind of cerebral when that stuff happens. So inside I'm going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But outside I'm going, oh, that's lovely.
Yeah,
that's fantastic news. Brilliant. When will you send out the information? Great. Well, I'll see you in 3 weeks then. Thanks, darlings.
I'm exactly the same. Phone down. No. And you're like,
yeah, exactly. So in my brain, there's like, you know, a brass band and a carnival and there's a what the whirlits are going on and there's, you know, all kinds of different rides and stuff. And then externally, I'm going, oh, how lovely. That's brilliant news. Thank you so much. Okay. Yeah. You take care. Lovely to hear from you. Bye. And then you get the tiniest amount of time to pull all of these looks together. It's a really short amount of time to have everything kind of made. You know, you took a wig. If you want to, if you order a wig, it can take a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you need to have 30 different looks.
Gosh, yeah.
In a less than a month.
Oh,
in less than a month, you need to get 30 looks together. So that's 30 full outfits with shoes, with wigs, with jewelry. Then you have to sort all the makeup out. You know, what's the idea with this? Where are you going to go with that? Take some stuff just in case, because you never know what they're going to ask you to do. And yeah, so there was, it's very exciting, but it's also very sort of stressful because the pressure to get all of this stuff sorted out is immense.
Oh gosh, I can imagine. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And what was it like when you first met Mamoru for the first time?
So the first time we met Mamoru was when she walked in. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a meme? Yeah, a meme that went round, a little video that somebody had made of my reaction when she told us what the prize was. Because I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know what the prize was, you know? So, of course, I'd been on altogether now and we'd given away 50 grand every time with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, for altogether now, all they had to do was put some clothes on and turn up on stage and sing their song. For Drag Race, you have got to prepare all of this stuff. And, you know, some of it is really specific. So it's not like you're just going to have it in your wardrobe. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
So you just have to sort of go, okay, let's get this made.
Right,
So there's a lot of kind of cost attached to going on Drag Race that is very easy to underestimate. So the first time we met was when she told us what the prize was going to be. And everybody else's reaction is exactly what they want from TV. Oh my God. Oh my God, amazing. And my reaction is,
are you for real?
Oh, we're going to make a web series.
Oh my gosh. I need to see this meme because I've never seen it. And I literally, as soon as we're finished, I need to watch it. Iconic.
I'll send it you. Maybe you can put it in the a link to it in the description as well.
I will.
Because it is literally, like, this person has literally climbed inside my brain and drawn out everything that was going on inside my head at that moment. It is very, very funny.
Oh, iconic. And
that was genuinely my reaction because I was like, well, we gave away 50 grand. I knew that that's as much as the BBC was allowed to give away. And I thought, right, well, with 50 grand, like, I can, I'm pretty sure, because I'd said, you know, if I did win, I would give it to my mum so that she could pay off her mortgage. And then she, you know, she wouldn't have had to, she's moved. She's, we bought a house in Gran Canaria. She lives there.
Love Gran Canaria. I was literally there last week.
I mean, we don't live in the crazy bit. We live in the north, in the middle of nowhere, you know, and we're surrounded by the most wonderful family. And we are in the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful. Yeah. So then when I got there and, you know, the amount of money that I'd spent, and then they go, yeah, you're going to win a web series. I was like, oh no.
What a joke.
I have invested rather more than...
But then, hey, look at the doors, though. What it Absolutely. Has opened for you. Like, it's incredible.
I mean, none of that is ever promised. You know, it's never a guarantee because, you know, if you don't connect with the public, then you'll know very quickly that you don't connect with the public, you know?
Yeah.
They'll be like, we're not going to follow you. We're not interested in what you've got to say, you know, all of that stuff. So it's very quick that you'll realize, oh, okay, this hasn't given me what I needed or what I wanted.
Yeah.
But I have been incredibly lucky and had universally a positive reaction from people, you know, in terms, because I've worked with so many other Drag Race girls before I went on.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that some of those girls go through with, you know, the fandom is outrageous. And I have been incredibly lucky and not had any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very, very lucky. The amount of negativity I've had has been absolutely minuscule, and it's been 99.9% positive from all the interactions that I've had. Yeah, incredibly lucky.
I'm so glad. But your talent, it really did shine through on the series, and your experience, you could just tell that you'd had so much experience in theatre and everything before going on the show, and it just came alive through the screen to us.
That is
honestly
such a polite way of calling me old.
No! No, Davina, no.
I could just see that you'd had so much experience. You know, you'd really lived a life before you arrived on the show.
No, but you had the talent. You had it there to back it up. And then you were saying me them vocals on bloody Break Up Bye Bye. You were like,
yeah.
I was like, what is going down? Like, you are amazing. But tell us about, like, because everyone talks about the journey you go through and the emotions which come out on the show. What was your journey like throughout?
I think I was in a bit of a manic episode. I was not very well.
Right.
I'd taken a back step from doing as much as I was doing because we were in Manchester and I was doing sort of 70 to 100 hours every week. And then if it was a busy week, you know, sometimes we were doing 150 hours a week. We were working a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, we'd bought a place in Gran Canaria and we'd moved out there. And so I was coming back kind of once a month to do a little, you know, go do some gigging. You know, yeah. I'd come back once a month to do some gigging. And then I did, you know, some other bits of theatre in that time as well. So I'd do like a 2-week run here. So you're there for a month or, you know, whatever. And so I'd done bits and pieces of that as well over that time. But I think I just really burnt myself out and Drag Race just threw me straight back into it.
Mm.
And we didn't have a place to stay or anything like that. So, you know, while I was getting ready, I was in the Easy Hotel in Manchester.
Oh, my God. The glamour, so, the glitz and the glam.
Honestly, the cleaners in there must have hated me. So I was in the Easy Hotel for 3 weeks because I didn't have anywhere to stay. So I was in the Easy Hotel for 3 weeks. And the amount of glitter and rhinestones and like bits of hand sewing. And at the same time, you know, like I remember, because it's freezing cold as well. You're getting ready in January time.
Yeah.
And I had gigs at GAY. And so I would travel down on the coach because I'm absolutely brassic at this, you know, I've put all of this money into costumes. I got no money at all. Yeah. So I'm traveling on the coach to meet designers and dressmakers. And then I'm also, you know, sewing at the same time. So I remember being sat in King's Cross Station and for the Queen outfit that I made, I was sewing the white ribbons. I was sewing all of that into shape sat in King's Cross Station with some fingerless, you know, like some gloves that I'd cut the ends off, because it was, and it was, so I'm like shivering sewing this. Yeah. So the show itself, I was not in a great place for it. And I also just felt such an enormous amount of pressure, because the way that the drag industry had worked for me, particularly up to that point, was all your gigs come from other queens. Mm-hmm. You know, apart from me doing GAY all the time with Jeremy Joseph, all of my gigs came from other queens, because most of the time it's the drag host who organizes the cabaret slots. You know, she's like, oh, well, she's really good, you should book her for then, and then have her, and then da-da-da. You know, so they're really involved in that. Well, if you... Do you swear on this?
Yeah, I can swear. Explicit. Well, there'll be a little E.
If you fuck it up at that point on that show, and then the show isn't a hit and it gets cancelled, all of those other queens are going to be like, yeah, yeah, you took away that opportunity from all of us as well.
Oh, so, gosh.
I'm not going to recommend you for anything.
The pressure.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's that pressure as well. And then it's the first time that much of the world has been exposed to British drag since Lily Savage, really. Yeah. You know? And so I don't know why I felt like we were responsible for doing anything other than just showing yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. But I did. I really felt that... that responsibility to the rest of the community to not be totally shit.
And you were absolutely phenomenal.
But I was so nervous the whole time. I was literally in fight or flight mode the entire time I was there. Yeah. Whereas now I think I'd be much more chilled about it, because, I think I'd just be much more chilled about it.
Yeah.
Because it's not, whatever happens, it's not life or death, and it's not going to hurt you unless, you know, you're a sherry pie, and then it's going to ruin your career.
Yeah. Would you ever go back then? Would you go on, like, the new series? Like, it's like the UK versus the world.
Yeah, I mean, now that they're offering money, yeah, knock, knock, I'm ready.
Catching.
I'm ready. I had said, you know, until there's money on the table, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's great to go and say hello to everybody again and, you know, have a nice... Because I really enjoyed the creative process. You know, the creative process of going... Because they send you, like, a list of the potential runways. They send you more than you need to make. Well, they sent us more than we needed to make. So there were outfits that were, you know, prepared for it that just never got used.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that, you know, that creative process. And there's, you know, I say that I was mental, and there was stuff in the show that I really enjoyed. You know, I really enjoyed my sister being there. She appeared just at the right moment. Same with, you know, me seeing Katya, because we'd worked together quite a fair bit before that as well. I really enjoyed working with Blue and Bagger on the Frock Destroyers. Like, I really loved that, you know? And like I say, I've been so incredibly lucky with the reaction from people, you know? Some people are like, oh, she's so stuck up. She thinks she's all this. She thinks she's that. Because the production crew are constantly going, right, tell us everything that you can do. What are the things? So you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask you again, and you fall into the trap of telling them again without thinking about, no, they've already got this, love. What they're going to do is they're going to clip this up and they're going to play it every week so that people think you're so full of yourself. But what I will say is, I never said I was good at any of it, did I? I said I could do all of that stuff, but I never said I was good at it.
But listen, you mentioned Bagger and Blue. Like, to me, that sticks out so much. The Frock Destroyers were created, and you're still together now. Like, it's
we're
iconic.
Still gigging, still making, still doing. And, like, Blue is absolutely crushing it right now. Oh. She just did Celebrity Cooking School, and now she's on Dancing with the Stars Island. And she is... one of like, she's really inspirational, is our Blue. She is so disciplined. She's so dedicated. And she's so talented and so lovely. And she's smart. And Bagger is an absolute joy, you know?
Yeah.
She's a nightmare to try and rehearse with because she's like herding cats. But you just can't help but absolutely love her because she's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I feel so blessed to have them in my life. Oh. And I really love them. I really do love them both. They're just brilliant.
Yeah, you can tell that chemistry you have together.
Yeah.
That collaboration is just gold. And have you got a gig coming up right soon?
Yeah, we have a gig at Cruise, and I'm not going to reenact what happened the last time we were in Manchester because I am the sensible one. I never get drunk, and anybody who came to see the main event in Manchester, I am very sorry for how drunk I was.
Oh my gosh! Oh, I wish I was there. I want to be there.
I was very drunk.
I bet you were giving it.
I mean, I hardly ever drink at a gig, but I don't know what happened, but the train left the station and it would not stop.
Is it on YouTube? Because I need to see it.
Yes.
I need to get it up. I got it. But listen... What has life been like since Rue? What doors did it open? I know you've been doing musical theatre. Like, talk to us all about the next chapter after the show.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, I've done lots of, you know, what you would call regional musical theatre.
Yes.
You know, so I've done lots of stuff like that. I've done things that were... I've done loads of pantos and then loads of regional theatre and little bits of plays and musicals. And, you know, so I've done all of that stuff, but very kind of regional. And what Drag Race did was it opened up bigger commercial musical theatre stuff to me.
Yeah.
And I've been so incredibly lucky. You know, I've worked with... I did Chicago. I was Mary Sunshine. And amazing. Chicago is one of those shows where they are very, because everything is so honed, you know, they've had 20 years to really nail it and screw it and make sure this is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So the character does not change. You know, everybody has their own slight variation in interpretation, but it's this is how to hit that. This is how to hit this. You know, it's a really incredibly finely tuned machine. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved it. But they did make a change for me.
Yeah.
So it was the first time that Mary Sunshine had red hair. She's never ever in its 25 year history had red hair. And they gave me a sort of deep russety wig. And they were like, listen, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
This has never happened in the entire history of Chicago. Yeah. She is always blonde or brunette. She has never been a redhead, ever.
How amazing to change history.
Yeah.
In something so regimented like Chicago.
Yeah. And also to be the first Drag Race girl to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a massive accolade. So I did that and I honestly had the best time. I was with Darren Day, who I'd, you know, he was musical theatre royalty when I was little.
Yeah, yeah.
He won't enjoy that I've said that, but, you know, he's always been a massive name in musical theatre.
Yeah.
And he was a joy to work with,
yes,
like an absolute joy. Sunita, who was playing Mama Morton and is probably the sweetest, most lovely person I've ever met in my entire life.
Oh.
She is literal sunshine in human form.
Yeah.
I got to work with Joel Montague, who I'd known for a really long time. And we'd been kind of meant to work on various different projects forever. And it just hadn't happened. And then I'm, you know, we're like 2 weeks away. And he was like, girl, are you doing Chicago? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, I'm doing Chicago too.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
So, So, you know, just one of those kind of serendipitous moments. And then the girls who were playing Roxy and Velma were just incredible. Faye is just fantastic. And Jalenga, she's so tall and statuesque, and she just has these legs that go on forever. They're just, yeah, it was a joy. The whole experience was an absolute joy on Chicago. Then I went and did some panto and touring and, you know, other stuff with Drag Race things and my own tour. And then I had Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes, which you won an award for, right?
I did. I won a National Theatre Award for that, and I won the Broadway World Award as well for Best Musical Theatre Performance.
How amazing.
And it, yeah, it was. Yeah. And it was amazing.
And
I mean,
so deserved.
But this is just some little kid from Brighouse who has, you know, stumbled in and is then winning these awards. I mean, that's the only one that I think I would have done without Drag Race anyway.
Yeah.
Because the director, we've worked together for 20 years or more. You know, I've known her since university and she's incredible. Jamie Fletcher. And so I was in her head anyway for the role before. I mean, I'll let you into a not very well kept secret. We were supposed to be doing Little Shop of Horrors and I would have been the plant. Yeah.
That would have been iconic.
I mean, it would have been great, wouldn't it? But the rights got taken back for one reason or another. I don't know that, you know, there were plans and then the plans never happened anyway. But it doesn't matter because it then meant that instead of doing that, she said, well, you know, that's not going to happen. How do you feel about Hedwig? And I was like, yes. Yeah, I was 100% on board for that. And so she went away, looked at it all, and the script, it's right in the, you know, front of the script. It says, you can change bits, make it so that it's more relevant to the area, do this, do, you know, it encourages that. Mm-hmm. So, which is incredible because a lot of scripts are, that's it, nothing changes.
Yeah, it's good to be given that exactly artistic freedom.
Yeah. And because it is kind of part musical, part cabaret almost, you know, it sits in that fine line in between where you can have that interaction with the audience. And that's what John had always wanted. It's naturally going to do that anyway. There will be other things in the show that aren't in the show. Yeah, so that was an incredible experience. I really, really loved that. And like I said, so John Cameron Mitchell rang me. I'd done one show and he rang me in between and my brain like melted out of my ears. This is John Cameron Mitchell on my phone screen looking at me, and he's just so beautiful as well. You know, he really is extraordinary.
Yeah
And he was just so incredibly supportive and lovely, and you know, he really cares. And same with Stephen Trask. You know, they both really care about the show. They're so invested in it, and they're wonderful and super supportive. So that was amazing. And after that, I had done like pantos and stuff like that. So I'd worked with Imagine, which are a fantastic company, and I worked with Crossroads, and they're a fantastic company. And then I recently did SpongeBob.
Yes.
The musical.
Oh, amazing.
There's a little bit of left field casting, isn't there? Me as Plankton. Oh, nobody saw that coming, did they?
Oh, yeah. I wish I would have seen it. Our resident director, Tara, she was doing it right. Yeah, she's our res on Doubtfire. And I'm gutted I never got to see it, but I heard nothing but amazing things.
Tara made the most really, really wonderful room to work in.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of directors, and some directors just don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I call her my Tara Joy. I'm like, Tara Joy, every time I see her, because she radiates joy.
Yeah, Some of them just don't know how to make a room where the ideas can come out, where everybody's voice is valid, and where you feel supported, you know, and everything makes sense. You know, I'm making this decision. I'm doing this because...
Yes.
And it will then feed into here. And you go, ah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah.
Oh.
You know, some directors don't work like that. And Fabian Aloise was incredible. Blair, who was our resident, is just an absolute gorgeous human. Mm-hmm. So lovely to work with. The MD, Mark Crossland, fantastic. You know, I had a really lovely time working with all of those people.
Yeah, what a team.
Yeah, amazing. What a team. Oh. Yeah, amazing. I mean, such incredibly talented people with a wealth of experience.
Yeah. With some experience, but not old, just experienced. I'm never going to live that down. So yeah, your career just rocketed, absolutely rocketed, and it's just amazing. I can't wait to see what you do next.
But... I mean, I've been incredibly lucky that I've had a very kind of steady trajectory, you know, the whole time. I start in absolute backwater dive bars, and then you get to a nightclub, and then you move to here, and then you move to here, and then you do The Voice, and then you go on, and then you do All Together Now, and then you do Drag Race. And I've been incredibly lucky. And I'm so incredibly grateful to everybody who keeps turning up to say hello, you know, at stage door and coming to gigs and stuff like that. I am so grateful to everybody.
Oh. Well, you're adored. You're absolutely adored. And it's just been such a climb for you. And I'm so glad it's all happening for you. I really am. But what has been, this is quite a hard question. What has been one of the most joyous moments of your entire life? It doesn't have to be career, or it can be anything. Just a moment where you've been like, this is everything.
I mean, getting married to Paul really was. I'm genuinely so lucky and grateful for everything. We had a nightclub. We had a nightclub in Stoke, and we'd watched Katie Price's wedding, and she'd had all of this, white silk drapes everywhere, white satin. She'd had white satin drapes all around the room. I'm pretty sure it was Katie Price's wedding. I mean, it could have been any one of the weddings that she's had, but it was one of her weddings, I think. And that's what he decided that he wanted for upstairs in our nightclub. So the nightclub that we had, the dance floor was like probably 10 metres by 10 metres. And then there was another sort of 6 to 10 metres on the outside of the dance floor. So the dance floor sits in the middle of the room. And then there's all this space in the main room upstairs from this. I mean, it was massive. The venue was originally called The Place, and it had the Beatles play there, Stevie Wonder had played, you know, like the people had played in this venue.
Wow.
Like incredible. And then it was me on a Saturday night trotting up and down going, what you sitting alone in your room? Come on, everybody, like me, you know. A bit different. So the upstairs, and then above the dance floor was a sort of atrium. So it looks like you'd just got a greenhouse and shoved it on the top of your roof. You know, it was that kind of thing. But then once you've put all of this silk and you've got that atrium over the, I mean, it looked incredible. And the manager who was working for us at the time, Mark, he finished the shift at, I think it was like 3 or 4. Everybody's out by 5. And then he did all of that. You know, all of this satin that had been fireproof. He did all of this stapling all of it up until it was time for our wedding, you know. So he was, he worked incredibly hard for us.
Yeah.
So again, that was just joyous. All my family were there. It was just, the whole day was just lovely. Yeah. Aww. And we also had, the nighttime event was a masquerade ball.
Oh, wow. And, love a masquerade.
And there was like, like 900 people came, and I would say 90% of those were all dressed up. So they all had a mask and like frock coats or like a ball gown, or, you know, nearly everybody was dressed up. It was really it was an incredible event. And it was amazing that, you know, those people have come to celebrate with us. It was really beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, listen, this is kind of like a question you'd be asked in like the final of Rue. If you could walk into your childhood bedroom, vision that room, sit down next to yourself, what would you like to say to little Owen?
Be a bit more disciplined, you lazy bitch.
I love that. I love it. I love it. I feel like that's going to be the ad for this podcast. Normally everyone goes like, oh gosh, like, and gets a bit emotional. And that answer, bloody brilliant. And finally, Davina, what do you want to be remembered for most on this planet?
Oh, just bringing a bit of joy people's lives. Exactly. That's all. Yeah. You know, we're all here for such a short amount of time. And the structures of life are not designed to bring joy to people. Mm-hmm. So if I can do that in my little way for an hour or two on a Friday or Saturday night, that's what I'm there for.
Yes. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much. Shall we finish with a quick fire round of questions? Just answers.
Oh my God. We're going to have a quick fire. All Woo! Right, go on.
Here we go. When you think of the word joy, what is the first thing that comes to mind? Joy.
Oh my God. Well, listen, this is really stupid. There's... No, I'm not going to tell you that. Laughter. Friend.
Love it. What is your coffee order? If you drink coffee?
Listen, I have a coffee every morning. I like to keep myself trim. So I have coffee and lemon juice.
Good. Favourite animal?
Oh, tamarind monkey.
What superpower would you like to have?
Magic. I've always been obsessed with magic.
You are magic. Favourite takeaway and what's your order?
Oh, I'm a pizza. Yeah, I'm just a pizza. And without the cheese.
Ooh, no dairy?
No, it's a vegan thing, isn't it? You know, yes. I'm trying my best.
Yes.
I'm failing, just so that, you know, nobody's going to be like, well, I saw you eating a bar of chocolate. Yes, I am a failure and I can put my hands up to that. But
we try our best.
Where I can, it's vegan.
Yes. What is your favourite home-cooked meal?
Oh, garlic toast. I can't cook, so I just have toast.
Love toast. Love a bit of toast. I get it from the show every night and have like a whole loaf of toast. Yeah. Your favourite song of all time?
Oh, it's the Bell aria. Joan Sutherland sings it. You listen to her and you're just like, oh my God, this is unreal. How can somebody's vocal cords do this? This is unbelievable.
Oh my gosh, listen to that. Your favourite film?
Oh, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Most important thing in your life?
Oh, my husband.
Hubby. The best holiday you've ever been on?
Oh, you know what? Straight after A-levels, a big group of us all went to Filey. I had the best time. Honestly, it was the most... It was wonderful.
What a joy.
Yeah.
Favourite... Your favourite drink? It can be alcoholic or non-alcoholic.
Vodka.
Give us a vodka. Yeah, vodka. Favourite place on earth?
Oh, home. Gran Canaria. Yeah.
Your favourite fellow queen?
Oh God. There's going to be so many angry people.
Or someone who just inspires you. Do you know what I mean? Like
Bianca. I find Bianca incredibly inspiring. She is an absolute... She's incredible. Incredibly kind, incredibly vicious, and incredibly talented.
Amazing. And your favourite TV show?
Strictly Come Dancing.
Love Strickers. Yeah, it's my favourite. And finally, your favourite podcast you've ever been a guest on?
Well, it's got to be this one, hasn't it?
The Power of Joy. Oh, Davina, thank you so much. You have been amazing. You're just so full of life. And I've loved having you here sharing your story. So thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me, darling Adam. And have a gorgeous time at the show.
Oh, thank you.
Is it tonight? Are you working tonight?
8 shows a week. Joy coming at you. God, we've had 9 shows this week, so it's half term. So I'm just spreading that joy for the kids this week.
Oh, I don't know how you manage it. Oh, yeah, I saw Tom had said that you were doing 9 shows a week at the moment.
Yeah, I actually didn't know until last week. I was on holiday and then they posted it. And I was like, oh, I've got 2 shows on the Tuesday. Let's go.
Oh,
but we love it. God. You'll have to come and see the show.
Yeah, I really want to come and see the show. I really want to come and see the show.
Oh, drop me a message. I'll sort you out. You can come
and meet us
all. All
right, gorgeous. I will.
Yeah.
I will. Stunning.
Oh, thank you, Davina. Send you so much love. Darling. Enjoy. Have the best
big
week.
Big kisses to you.
Thank you so much.
Lots of love to you both. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Oh, well, what about that, my joys? What a gorgeous episode. It was so nice to get to know Davina more and listen to her amazing story. And it just shows you, you know, the work ethic. If you work hard, I mean, she was saying how lucky she is, but I feel like she has really grafted to where she is today, and everything she's achieved, she put the work in, and she's doing some amazing things for the community. So thank you, Davina, for sharing your story right here on The Power of Joy. You can follow Davina at Davina DeCampo on Instagram. Search her on Spotify. She's got some amazing music, and obviously with the Frog Destroyers, get to that gig at Cruise. I wish I could be there, but I'll be doing the show, but I shall watch it on YouTube. Can't wait. Thank you so much. If you enjoyed this episode, please give it a like, give it a subscribe and a share on social media. I would really appreciate it. I shall see you next time on The Power of Joy. And remember, joy is found not in finishing an activity, but in doing it. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness. If you carry joy in your heart, you can heal any moment. Lots of love, my joys. Mwah.